It's now time for Youth Unplugged right here on Radio Caribbean International. Of course, brought to you the kind compliments of our sponsor, Bank of St. Lucia, all the bank that you need. And I am very happy and privileged to be talking to Mr. Kenton Casimir as our guest this afternoon. Kenton, one might say, Kenton, you're not youth, but we are very, with what's going on today, I think you represent the voice of the youth. And, you know, I'm very grateful that you take the time out to have this conversation with me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Of course, you know, you have different categories of youth, and you have the very young youth, you have the middle-aged youth, and then you have the older youth. I'm amongst the middle, you know, because 45-year-old, you can't call a 45-year-old old, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. You're right.
I'm nowhere near there yet.
So. You're right. But Kenton, let's start off. I mean, you have so many titles to your name, which is quite, the norm amongst our guests lately. Sports anchor, community activist, do I dare say politician, and so much more. But, you know, it is always right to start from the beginning and allow you to introduce yourself to people who may not know who you are.
All right, so for people who do not know, Kenton Joel Casimir, of course, better known as BB in the community of Grosley, where, I mean, I always tell people I was born and I lived on Maritary Street, but I spent most of my time on B Street, which is the street very adjacent to the water when you go into Pigeon Point. And, of course, that is where I spent most of my time. I have bringing in a community breadfruit in every single yard. And so I grew up as a breadfruit and fish kind of guy, because, of course, that was free. So you pick your breadfruit and then you go, you fish, and whatever you catch, you roast it. By that time, the market was still, you know, the sea has gone with the market right now, but, you know, there was also a couple almond trees there. So you roast your breadfruit and, of course, use the seawater as your little salt for your little fish and that sort of stuff. And, I mean, I grew up playing cricket along the water, football along the water. And, of course, once you're living in that area and you're by the sea, people want to take a little foot race with you every now and then. And, of course, during that time, they used to always be left behind. So eventually, I've been attending the Grosley Primary School. I got involved in track and field, football, cricket, volleyball. And, of course, I always tell people I was raised by a community. I was raised to be very, very disciplined. If at the end of the day I did not say good morning or good afternoon to somebody in the community, and I get a callout, and I go and I tell my mother, of course we call her Ty and or Bobby Love, that, you know, that was to give me a callout, I would get a whooping. So I mean, being respectful and being disciplined was something that, you know, that was part of everyday living in Grosley. And of course, later on, becoming a national cricketer at the age of 13, it was the Grosley cricket team that came together to get me all the necessities, my bat, my trousers, my suit, my gloves, everything, my helmet. And so I've always been very appreciative to these people that actually helped us out, because we didn't come from the richest of families, to say the least. And my mom was somebody who was extremely hard to ensure that we went to school. Caroline Casimir, I always shout her out, because she worked two jobs, sometimes three jobs, going to Cap Estate, cleaning houses, ironing clothes, you know, doing whatever she needed to do to ensure that we got food on the table. And she always used to say, you might be hungry, but you're not starving. She always used to say that in the house. And she always reminded us that other persons were going through worse than we did. And so I grew up in the community. Basically, the community life was part and parcel of how I lived. And so Grosley Community Action Group played a huge role in the actual social consciousness that has led me to where I am today, being socially conscious of how people are living, what they are going through, and what's needed in the community. And so I appreciate everybody in Grosley, of course, Orion Track and Field Club, that's what, and later on football, of course, provided their support as well. And, I mean, the entire community really raised me, and I think right now they've called on me to give them better representation, and so that is what the ambition is right now. So the Gustav family, which is my father's side, these are people that have always supported me. And even now, going around the community, these are the same people, Ruby, who's like my soldier, and Grozily going around with me and that sort of thing. So things have been very nice. So at the end of the day, for me, I'm very humbled by what is going on with my life right now. And I feel very, very privileged that so many people have put confidence in me.
You've been so much involved in the sporting fields, like you rightfully said, volleyball, track and field. What direction did you expect your life to take?
Boy, everybody was saying Olympics. Everybody wow. was saying Olympics, because most persons were saying, even when I did track and field, I was a multi-event specialist. So I would still end up representing St. Lucia in the heptathlon, which was high jump, long jump, triple jump, the 200 meters, you know, discus throw. Because everything I did in sport just seemed to come naturally. And so a lot of persons expected that. But if you speak to a John Eugene Alton Crafton or Joe Hall, these individuals would tell you, boy, mate had the pace at the age of 15, 16. Even a cup, but Elise at Leon S. Comprehensive Secondary School, you know, they would say, boy, this guy could have been a West Indian fast bowler. And then you speak to Lou Boy, the principal of Leon S. Comprehensive. And at that time, my football coach, he would tell you, boy, you could have played forward. You could have been... So at the end of the day, there are different schools of thought. But generally, I think track and field was my first love, because the first time I actually got an opportunity to wear that blue and yellow, black and white was actually in track and field, and that was in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And of course, Platini was my coach, and he shouted behind me. I always tell people that, so I hope he heard. He shouted behind me in St. Vincent. I was like 9 years old, and I started crying in front of everybody. Platini not doing that. So you wonder why I still have rid of him, because, boy, when he shouted behind you, that was something else. But yeah, man. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, getting involved in sports broadcast was something that I also always wanted to do, because that is what I enjoyed reading. I enjoyed reading about the different athletes, I mean, the different personalities and that sort of thing. So reading came naturally for me when it came to sports, so sports broadcast, a passion that I always have, and that's something I'm going to continue doing even beyond politics.
How did the whole sports broadcasting, how did that happen? What was the first time somebody said, you know what, if you're not, your experience in sports, you look like you would be good in front of a camera? How did that happen?
You know, it kicks off, eh? Sometimes you hear somebody like, a Stuart Scott, you know, on ESPN and that sort of thing, and then you emulate these people, because, I mean, you watch how they broadcast, and then you go, like, in sports, or somebody kills somebody, or something, something. You know, it kicks off when people hear you doing it as it kicks off. And they tell you, boy, you can actually do this. I mean, like my brothers and that sort of thing when we were younger. And I remember Dominic Fede was into broadcast, and he used to read a lot of the newspaper. And so I used to read the back of the newspaper and sports and that sort of thing. And it was later on when I finished school, actually, when I finished my master's degree in mass comm, I came back home. My father was working at NBC, Stephen Gustav, shout out. And he said to me, boy, these people are starting news, and they need somebody to be a news anchor. And I was thinking, boy, it's what I want to do and that sort of thing. But I took the opportunity. So I spoke to McLean at that time, who was the manager at NBC. And he said to me, you know what, you could really read the news. So I did the news. And then eventually we included the sports. And I was somebody who always liked the sporting aspect. So when I moved over to HTS, I actually specialized in sport. And since then, sports has been what I've been broadcasting.
Nice. That's pretty amazing. Now, you said you studied mass comm. I mean, that's not something that you know, people know much about. Tell us that experience.
Right. Ronnie, let me tell you, again, I want to encourage young people, do what you love at the end of the day. Do what you love. Because I did a degree in management, and it was my final, communication management was the final, in my final semester. All the tough stuff was in the final semester, communication management, account, econ, and that sort of thing. And communications management, funny thing, is what I focus least on, because obviously when you're doing accounts and econ, you want to spend more time making sure you get those things unlocked. And we had a presentation, and that was in 2008, and that was the same time Obama was into his, into his yes we can
yes,
thing.
Yeah,
that was
right.
All of the day. And our final presentation had to be oral presentation in front of the class. And my professor was very impressed with my communication skills there and that sort of thing. And he said, boy, he said to me, he came to me and he said, and the thing about the state is most of the professors, they have their own businesses. So they get a feel for, you know, what you can do and how you can actually fit in. And I actually worked with that professor off campus as well. And he said, you know what, your scholarship should be in mass comm. And that is why I got like a full ride to do a master's in mass communications from just that one oral presentation at the end. Because before that, everything was written. And he said to me, yo, you could take this thing to the highest level if you make your mind up to do just that. So I never regretted, because when I told people I was going to do my master's in mass comm, people were like, what are you going to do with that in St. Lucia? You'll not get paid. You'll not get no money and that sort of thing. But I just said, you know what? I'll do what I love. And that's what I did.
That's pretty amazing, man. I mean, yeah. It's really good. Sometimes, you know, it's said that, you know, always put your best foot forward. You never know who's watching. And that was, I guess, a literal situation for you of that. So kudos to you. What career path did you want, though? What is it that you really wanted to do?
Ooh, that's a very good question, Roddy. I always say that I want to be a professor. I started a PhD in sociology. Anybody who knew me at Saffa Lewis knew that I loved the sociology. And at the end of the day, I love speaking. So, I mean, I had some opportunities to lecture at UWE Open Campus. I lectured at Saffa Lewis as well. And also at the University of North Texas alongside some of the professors. It came natural to me explaining things, especially in communication theory, management, and all that sort of stuff. And it's something that comes second nature, interacting with students, you know, provide training and getting them ready for exams and that sort of thing. So I've always said, end of life, I want to end as a professor and more than likely in media communication, that sort of field. And I still want to do that, which is another reason why I've entered into the arena as a young man, because I've never envisaged being in my 60s, 70s without having made a significant contribution to the social fabric of our community. So I've always said I was going to do it young. I purposed in my mind that I was going to do it young, and that is why I am so fired up to get it done right now. And I think right now we need a sort of a different way of thinking, and that is what I intend to implement in the community of Grosley.
Now, I like the way you put that, because it's a perfect way. One of my favorite words I use on the program is to segue into, yes, into the other part. Let's talk about the whole politics and, you know, how did you get into the political arena? Did it come natural because of your natural love for your constituency? Or, I don't know, how did it happen?
That is, you would speak to most people and they would tell you, growing up, and the persons who went to Saffa Lewis with me, some of my lecturers, they would tell you they always anticipated that at some point I would have gotten active into politics. Again, social consciousness, being aware of what's going on in the community. I was hired as a social transformation officer for Grosley in 2010. And the social transformation is all about social safety nets for persons in the community, dealing with poverty, poverty alleviation, forming community action groups, disaster preparedness in the community. And so I had a lot of experiences working with disenfranchised families in the community and putting your best foot forward to see which corporate entities will provide some form of comfort, whether it's financial comfort, whether it's medical comfort, whether it is sustenance and that sort of stuff. So being a social transformation officer in Grosley really propelled me to see what should be done by way of policy to improve people's lives. And doing that for about 10 years, the final 3 years was at the Youth and Sports, but doing that for a significant amount of time in my initial career as a social transformation officer really made me see, okay, you've made your contribution as a STO, you've made recommendations, some of them taken, some of them not taken, some of them implemented at the way that you believe that if you're a parliamentary rep, you could do more to actually implement. And so I actively decided that, you know what, in terms of the policy, the shaping the policy for how the community is driven and how St. Lucia is moved in another direction is what I decided that would be best for me. And a lot of people pushed me in that direction. Of course, Mario Michel was my mentor for a very long time. I remember on Sundays being at Grambling State University and having thorough conversation with him about how things were developing in St. Lucia. And he's one of the individuals that have always encouraged me to do better, reach for the sky, and do things the right way, because that's who he is. And I have tried my best to emulate as much as I could based on what I've learned from him. And I've had some thorough conversations with Julian R. Hunt as well, who has really encouraged me to stay in the community, be on the ground, and stay committed to people, people first. And that is why we actually have the tagline for our campaign, "It's About You," because it's really about all segments of Grozile right now.
Based on the names that you call, I almost feel disrespectful for having so much yellow in the banner on Facebook. So, but I'll just let you know that I'm properly represented with my hat and my shirt. But what makes you different from any other politician? And I use the word politician lightly.
Pastor Ronnie.
First of all, yeah, politicians ego say gasa, which is what I love.
I don't know what's going on, because at the end of the day, we are in a situation right now where red and yellow has to be pushed so far back from the imaginations of our people in our community that it sometimes hurts when you speak to doing something like ALTAP, which is Adult Literacy and Technological Advancement Program that I want to implement for our elderly people to actually learn the computer skills. But after they retire, if they do decide they want to do something online and make some income for their family, if they still have the energy and people go online and absolutely fight that down, you wonder what is going on with our people. It's right now about uplifting every segment of our community. For me, I've gone to every single household that I've gone to so far for the last 6-7 months, and anybody who's with me would confirm to you that I say, you know what, I have come here for me to listen to your issues in the community. I am not here to make promises to Mama Guy, but I have a vision for how we should be functioning as a people, how as a community we can develop. And I say to them, I'm not making promises, but there's one thing I can assure you, I will stay connected with the community to see what we can do. And the person say, promise me this, promise me that. And I say to them, for me, I prefer to go the honest route. So if at the end of the day, your request, the request that is being made requires 10, and I can give one right now, I would say very candidly, we can do this one thing right now, and let's see how we get the balance executed. And from just speaking to people in the community, they say, why they see me and they expect me to come and just, you know, just blow them away with endless promises and that sort of thing. And I say, no, I have a Facebook page where I share my vision. I go door to door and I share a vision, and I tell people in the community, gravitate towards me. Let me know what your vision is. And in a country of limited resources, let us prioritize what can be done right now and what can be pushed to aside. What is most needed by the majority and what would create the biggest impact for all. Let's gravitate towards that right now, and let's see what else can be done given our limited resources. Most important resources, human resources. Let's develop our human resources within the community, and let's see what else we can do. And that has been my approach, and that is how I encourage any other individual, any young individual, middle-aged individual who's coming into this process, let's start having conversation and policy and vision and what we can do versus what we should not be doing, and let's see how we can logically establish a better country for our next generation.
With all that said, why not start your own party with more people, you know, around that age group?
I would be very frank with you. I have given a lot of thought to that. And Ronnie, I can confirm with you that I have spoken to a lot of individuals that are intelligent, that are passionate about their community, that have the capacity to present better representation than what we see on right now as governance. And at the end of the day, Ronnie, a lot of our young people are afraid. Mm-hmm. And you're going to remember this conversation when they start coming with the personal attacks on me. Remember this conversation, because some of the brightest minds that I have interacted with, they've made mistakes in their lives, because we are all human beings. We have a past. We have certain things that we are not proud of. And at the end of the day, for young people to have that on display for the rest of the world is something extremely frightening. So we have people in our country that have all the capacity in the world, but they are afraid of what our politics has become in St. Lucia right now. They tell you, boy, I need to tell you, when you reach there, you're public goods. So at the end of the day, anything, and the personal attacks, the familial attacks, and all those things, and they tell you, boy, I am really afraid to get involved in that, because at the end of the day, once I'm crucified, that's it. And I mean, you can have a conversation with Lisa at any point in time, and she would tell you, Lisa Zawa here, that the second she got involved in active politics as a young, intelligent young lady, beautiful, I might add, the first thing that actually happened to her was that she lost some of her contracts, because of course she was into communication and promoting social media and that sort of thing. And she lost significant contracts. That is the first thing that happened when she announced her intention. And as a young person, it is sad. It is very difficult, because the second you identify with any particular philosophy, you are just, at the end of the day, just branded and cast aside by nearly half the population. And so it's an unsavory thing. It's something that is very demotivating. And so the prospect of having a new campaign was something that was very far-fetched. And even in some of the conversations with everybody, you've heard the pressures, the demands, the financial demands of a campaign, mm-hmm. is such that you would need some form of a solid base and foundation that really does not allow a new sort of party to be formulated right now. It's very difficult.
All right. Very good answer, which is kind of like you were preparing for my next question, is like, how do you deal with the ugly of politics? Like you rightfully said, people dig down to the last time that you didn't wipe your butt in high school, and they find out the nastiest things to bring against you. How do you deal with that? Like, what is your personal approach to dealing with that?
First and foremost, mental strength. You have to be mentally prepared for hearing things about yourself. Brody, I hear things about myself. I literally go to bed laughing. And you can decide to go to bed laughing or go to bed crying with some of the things that I've said about you, things that you've never imagined yourself could have ever done. And so at the end of the day, I tell people, you need to be mentally strong. You need to know who you are. You need to know your personality. You need to have a strong, let me tell you, Ronnie, you need your family behind you. I have the best mom in the world. I have a very encouraging father, and my family, I mean, the Kazimis, the Gustavs, the Hyacinths, these individuals, these people have been behind me, and I could always call on them to actually speak to them when something goes awry and that sort of thing. You need that. But with politics, you have to also understand that you're dealing with personalities. I say that to my campaign every day. You are dealing with, grossly, I have 23,000 voters. You are literally negotiating 23 types of worldviews. 23,000 individuals that see things differently, negotiate interactions differently. And at the end of the day, once you're in that group, you are going to have conflict. And so you have to know, in dealing with conflict, it requires patience. These people are different, and everybody sees the same, that this one thing could be seen in so many different ways. And so at the end of the day, you have to always be cognizant of what it is that you are trying to do, what it is you are trying to do, why you are doing what you are trying to do, what you are doing. And at the end of the day, stay focused and keep calm, breathe. I do a lot of yoga, my brother. I work out frequently. I make it my duty to make sure I wake up in the morning and do my morning workout. Even that, Ronnie, people go on Facebook and say, hey, workout alone means working out. So at the end of the day, that's just the nature of things.
Now, one more along those lines, like, what about attacks on your family? You know, that strong support system where persons are usually afraid to get into politics because it affects the family. I want to know from your family's perspective. I know they're very supportive of it, but, you know,
Give me more details. Give me more.
I will tell you, my mom is the person that I'm most sensitive about in this world. And I can tell you that there was this one time I got up early to do my workout, and I saw a vehicle reversing up the hill. And obviously this person did not know that I woke up so early to work out. And they were taking pictures of my house. They were literally taking pictures of my house. And the person drove down and they drove back up slowly. And they were taking pictures of my home and that sort of thing. And then I was like, what is going on? My mom is somebody, I'm going to share this with all of St. Lucia, that absolutely loves living in Groseley. I have begged my mom to move in with me forever. Since I've been back home and I bought my own property, there's more than enough space for, and she, at the end of the day, is the type of person to be very comfortable with her spot. So she's in a spot, no matter how much notice they would give her to leave her spot, she will not leave her spot. And I'm sure if she's listening right now, she's smiling, and the rest of the family is smiling because they know what I am talking about. And I was reliably informed, because I actually saw who the individual was, that they also went to take pictures of her house to see, because at the end of the day, she lives in the same house that we were raised in. But I can share with you, Ronnie, that for me as a young man, my mother's electricity bill is paid every month by me, her water bill, and I take care of my mom. But they have already started a smear campaign to make it look like I have left my mom and I've gone on to greener pastures. Wow. And so at the end of the day, that is something that the campaign is aware of. We've heard even from persons from the inner workings of the other party that they have confirmed with me, because obviously, Ronnie, you have to be able to negotiate certain things, that this is one of the attacks that we are going to have going forward for the election. And at the end of the day, I know what I know, my family know what they know, and we are very close, and we understand that this is something that everybody looks at as fair game, and at the end of the day, we are going to deal with it once it comes around. But I guess we just put it out there.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Again, even for me, I've always said that one day I would like to go represent my people down in Viewfort, because I'm originally from Viewfort. And it is demotivating, because you know the personal attacks, and if you ain't strong, boy, you have to definitely be strong. So thank you. Trust me, you've been motivating me, and so if y'all ever need a candidate for Viewfort, I'm open. I'm just saying that.
Which Viewfort is that? Is that Viewfort North or Viewfort South?
Viewfort South, yeah.
Okay, I am.
Yeah. Talk about that's another conversation. Kenson, it's already 3:30, so time for us to wind down the interview. Absolutely. I have so many more questions to ask, but just in closing, let's talk to the youth and encourage the youth based on your experience, especially now with all that is going on, especially towards men, because the energy, if you know about energies and stuff, the energy that is going on right now, it's very difficult for men to keep on persevering, to keep on moving, all these struggles that they're probably going through. What message can you leave with them to close off this afternoon?
I would say, just quite frankly, that you should always look at your circle. Always look at your circle. If you are in a circle of friends that at every single juncture, you are the smartest person in that circle, or the smartest person in the room. Every single area that you go to, you seem to be the one who commands everything and you learn nothing, then you need to change that circle. For me, that is a golden rule for me. If at the end of the day, the individuals that I interact with daily do not teach me anything as a human being, or do not provide any value to me living as an individual and moving from point one, from point A to point B, I always consider whether or not I need to continue to be part of that circle, yeah. Whether or not I should limit that circle and get involved in a circle that actually edifies me and helps me along my journey. So at the end of the day, sometimes we like being with groups of people that just love us and adore us and that sort of thing. It doesn't challenge anything we say. But I encourage young people to always, always try to move on in life by interacting. I mean, networking is very important. You may meet somebody one day and you would see the person as a hero figure, but we know fuss about whether or not you should speak to them. But saying hello, being nice and friendly is something that could always help you in this life, and that your network needs to be expanded. It cannot be the same people over and over, because you will just not move on in life. So I always encourage people to read. At school, I made it my duty to read a book a week. And at the end of the day, that pretty much added to 52 books to expand the mind. That I always encourage people to read and to always stay connected with how society is moving, and most importantly, Ronnie, have a relationship with God. If you do not have any relationship with God, then you are not serious about developing your life.
Very well. And finally, I swear this is the final question. Final. What is the importance of having a strong woman by your side?
Only, well, you know who set up that whole appointment thing there, because you're calling me left, right, and center, and I tell you, Ronnie, your check, Lisa. Lisa, I have my whole schedule. Lisa is the one ensuring that I am where I'm supposed to be at every single point in time for me to execute what I'm executing with this campaign. As I said, Grozely is a huge place with 23,000 voters compared to Denry South with 5,200 voters. It tells you that I have a challenge that is four times the average of the other areas. And so at the end of the day, I mean, you need to understand that once you are going to be interacting with somebody frequently, the two of you would always need to be as much as possible on the same page and share passion for what it is that you want to do. And luckily for me, we both share a passion for communal development and moving St. Lucia's youth and every segment into the right direction. So once you both have that understanding that this is the overall goal, it simplifies everything. And it's about, as Chris Rock says, it's about a band. It's not about somebody being higher than anybody or somebody being subordinate. It's a band. You're playing the guitar while I'm playing the drums, while somebody else is playing the piano, somebody else is playing something, so we can harmonize and move in the right direction. So whereas she is doing the scheduling, I am doing the actual commitment to being where I'm supposed to be and moving on the ground and that sort of thing. And once you can communicate that daily, then you know you're cooking with gas.
Definitely. Kenton Casimir, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Youth Unplugged. And of course, we will hope to be hearing from you, I guess, on the various other programs right here on Radio Caribbean International, where you'll be representing and speaking for your constituency. And all the best in the upcoming elections. Yeah.
Thank you so much, my brother.
All right. Have a good one. Youth Unplugged right here on Radio Caribbean International. Of course, brought to you the kind compliments of our sponsor, Bank of St. Lucia.